Thank you for a really nice introduction and welcome everybody. It's really nice to see some of you who I know a little bit, or at least I'm familiar with your face and name. it's really nice to see many of you that I don't know yet. And welcome. I'm just extremely happy to be presenting on this particular topic. It's something that I've been teaching a lot about lately. It's something very close to my heart. And we'll have a short taste today of what it might be able to do for your heart. And speaking of imagination, so how imagination might be beneficial to you and your heart and your life, and just even in opening your own mind. So I'd like to start with a poem before we do our practice. And this is a poem by Dzongtsar Khyentse Rinpoche, who's currently with us. And he says, "The art of life is not about creating a masterpiece, but about constantly improving the canvas that we're given. It's not about achieving perfection, but about embracing imperfection and finding beauty in it. The art of life is not about following the rules, but about discovering our own unique way of expression. It's not about conforming to society's expectations, but honoring our own inner voice and intuition. The art of life is not about avoiding pain, but about using it as fuel for transformation and growth. It's not about seeking happiness, but about cultivating a deep sense of joy and contentment within. May we all find the courage to live our lives as works of art, with creativity, authenticity, and a spirit of adventure. May we never stop learning, exploring, or growing. And may our lives be a testament to the beauty and wonder of existence." So let's practice together. This practice will be approximately 30 minutes. And so I'd like you to be able to choose a posture or a shape or a form for your body that is most comfortable for that amount of time. That could be seated, it can be lying down, it can be standing. And we always can give ourselves the choice of having the eyes fully closed or keeping our eyes somewhat open with our gaze cast comfortably down about 4 or 5 feet in front of us. So find what works for you now. I'll give you a moment to get yourself settled. And as always, everything that I'm going to be offering you is up to you, whether you'd like to follow it along or not. You can skip certain parts. You can open your eyes and look around. You can move if you need to, just so that you don't ever feel that you're confined to doing something because it's suggested. And if it's not feeling right for you right now, that's absolutely okay. So please give yourself lots of permission to follow your own body, your own needs, and what might support you the best for now. And let's begin by bringing our kind awareness to the weight of the body. Maybe you sense different areas of your body that are heavy, different bones. Maybe you can sense gravity holding you, keeping you here on the earth, on whatever it is that your body is on. Let's see if you can allow yourself to give way to weight and gravity. As much as possible for now, so that there's a physical settling of your body in space. And then if you can, see if you can sense the space around you. Without looking, what can you feel in terms of the area between your head and the ceiling? Your front body, back body, side bodies to the walls. Or if you're outside, maybe to the sky or the ground. What can you sense about being in the environment and the space that you're in right now? You might be able to feel the temperature of the area that you're in or the room, sensing warmth or coolness. Almost like swimming through water, a pool of water, body of water, where there are warm areas and cool areas. The areas where your skin is exposed to the air in the space might be cooler than the skin that's covered by clothing. So we sense the space and then the air within it. You might also sense the light within the space that you're in. It could be from outside. It could be from lighting inside. Whether your eyes are fully closed or somewhat open, there's light that comes through the eyelids and the eyes. What can you see? Maybe there's a scent or a smell in the air in the space that you're in. Maybe you can notice that. Or the sounds in your room, around your room, from my room, my voice. What can you hear? Everything that's in the space, the environment, And the air that's right around us is coming in and out of our bodies all the time. And this air can create space. This air can contain the bird songs, the smells, the light, the temperature, the mystery of everything that is all around us all the time and within us all the time. So as we take a simple breath in and out without even trying, there's this continual exchange between what's outside and what's inside. We receive and we give constantly. Breath or prana, which means life force, or chi, which can mean energy, or lung, which can mean wind, even just breath, is not flat. It's rich and full of mystery, and whatever we imbue it with, it can be full of heart. The ocean breeze, a cloud, the scent of flowers, whatever might be helpful for us. So as you sense your breath entering and leaving, maybe just at the nostrils, maybe as it moves down your throat and into your chest, wherever it is that you might feel it or want it to go, if you'd like to, imbue it with the quality, the life force that you think it might have. And if that's supportive for you, imagine breathing in a little more deeply. So you breathe in the sun, the clouds, the spray from the ocean, the bird songs, love from another. And you bring it into your body as deeply as is comfortable. And then you mix it with everything that you have to give, your presence, your love, your kindness, your nature, your true nature, and you send it back out, just like the breezes that take the prayers on the Tibetan flags all around the earth. Give yourself as much permission as possible to imagine this rich, mysterious breath that comes in, mixes with our hearts and minds and bodies, and then we return back out to share. Bring it in as deeply as you like. Move it anywhere in your body that you'd like to, or your mind, or your heart. And experiment for a little while. See what happens. And if that's not something that's so interesting to you, just sense the breath as a dimension beyond what we know. Or sense your body in this space. You're a part of a huge, infinite vast space. But give yourself the freedom and the permission to let what comes be supportive. And we'll rest, we'll sit, we'll practice, we'll stand, we'll lie down together in silence now for about 10 minutes. Now, if you'd like to, imagine that the breath, the prana, the air, even the space that is coming in and out of your body is making room. You can breathe in and out through the center of your chest, through your pores, through your nose, whatever feels comfortable for you. But the next breaths that you take are creating more and more soft space all around the area of your heart. It's as if you're blowing up a bubble or a balloon. It's that soft, it's that tender, and it's that delicate. So the breath is very soft. It's surrounding the area of the heart and it's touching the heart. But it's creating some nice room, nice space for your heart to stretch its wings just a little bit more. Maybe you can sense the ribs expanding when you breathe in, or a soft swirling of the breath around the internal container around your heart. Just creating a little bit more room. If you'd like to, once you breathe in, you can hold that breath just for a second and let it be absorbed. All the properties of the breath that you've imbued it with are being absorbed into your body, especially the area around your heart. And then breathe out, giving it back. And the more space you might be able to procure is the more space you can invite somebody in. So if you'd like to, imagine someone that you deeply love. Some being that you deeply love to come into this larger, softer, inclusive space that you've made around your heart. It's like you're inviting them into this very special room that you have. And they just come in and they're there with you. No need to exchange any words necessarily, but just see if you can sense their presence in this area that you've created. What does it feel like? What are the sensations to have this being with you inside? If you have extra room, you can invite someone else. It's up to you. But invite beings that you really, really love, who love you and you know it. Invite them in, share the space, feel the love, the generosity of spirit, the appreciation that you have for each other. We feel emotions in the body. See what you can sense. Decorate the space if you want. It can look like whatever you like. Now slowly, slowly allow the beings or the being that you've invited in to take leave happily, visually, but not in presence. And remember this room, this space, this capacity that will grow if you cultivate it, but remember it because you can always call it back. Utilizing your imagination, your breath, your heart, your willingness to create some space for kindness, space for friendship, space for generosity, space for love, compassion inside of you. And from this space, no matter how large or small it might be, just intentionally share it with all living beings, all sentient beings right now, in any way that feels comfortable or accessible to you. Could be through breathing out. It could be through a prayer. It could be through just being. Knowing that we're all connected. With every breath, we're connected. If you've been lying down, very kindly, gently, considerately begin to come up and take your time. If you'd like to come back to the screen, I invite that. And as your eyes open and include the screen, see if you can see all of us here through the eyes of the space or the eyes of your heart. And in these little rectangles that we're visually in right now is a very wonderful, beautiful human being with a very rich life and probably with similar intentions as we all have to come to something like this, to spend our time together. So if we keep our eyes really soft, our gaze relaxed, then we can take in the screen maybe in a little bit of a different way than we normally do. And we can see each other or our representations of each other, however we look here on the screen, with a little bit more appreciation of dimension. If you'd like to stretch a little bit, please do. Take a moment. So there was a painter, some of you may be familiar with, whose name was Francis Picabia. And he was painting at the same time that Pablo Picasso was painting. In fact, there was a lot of similarities. But he said, our heads are round, so our thoughts can change direction. And I really like remembering that, because what we imagine basically leads us in one direction or another. What we imagine also turns into or is our perceptions, are our perceptions. And we know from our practice, we know from our self-awareness, we know from Dharma that perceptions aren't always true. They feel real, but they're not always true. And that there's room to change our minds, and there's room and space to change our hearts. And I will also add that we can change our bodies to a great degree as well. And this has some quality, any of these changes have a quality of imagination somewhere inside them. I'm going to read you a couple of quotes that I think illustrate or talk about the place that imagination has in our Dharma practice and even in our lives. And this first one is called The Power of Imagination, and it's by the late, great, never leaving us, Thich Nhat Hanh. And he said, imagination is the power that allows us to see what's beyond visible, to hear beyond what's audible, to touch beyond what's tangible, and to know beyond what's intellectual. Through imagination, we connect with the boundless wisdom of the universe. and discover the true nature of reality. Imagination is the bridge that spans the gap between the finite and the infinite and leads us to the ultimate truth of our existence. The ultimate truth of our existence. You know, I think sometimes we can get just a tad dry, a little crunchy, a little rote, a little bored. I'm sure you can relate. And our imagination is what brings us the juice to continue or inspire us. If we think we know everything, we're really at dead end. Yeah. I read this quote recently from Albert Einstein. He said, "I am enough of an artist to draw freely from the imagination. Imagination is more important than knowledge. Knowledge is limited. Imagination encircles the world." So when we talk about imagination or where it's mentioned, it's not mentioned all that much in Dharma teachings, but some. And I've been researching this for a few years. So I have lots of fodder to share with you. I'll share as much as I can in the time that we have. But if we don't have the imagination or the intent that fuels intention, then we really don't go very far. We can't even imagine that we can end our suffering. We have to be able to imagine that suffering can end. We have to imagine that we can liberate ourselves, our hearts, and each other if we take a bodhisattva vow, or just if we want to be of service. Or if we are compassionate, because remember, compassion is a verb that includes action. And so compassion is not placid, it's not passive. It includes action to take care. So when we combine mindfulness, which allows us to be with what is for more than a brief moment at a time, when we have a little bit of clarity, which also space can help with, right? We feel a little more spacious. We're a little more clear. We can see. We can recognize what's going on. And then we sense or feel or see what's happening with each other. We have the clarity and the fuel to help where help might be needed to save each other from needless suffering, needless distress, from needless hurt or mistreatment, right? So we need to imagine that we can be of service, that we can help ourselves in order for it to even start. Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, another known and maybe controversial but wonderful teacher, wrote about imagination that imagination is the lifeblood of the universe, the fountainhead of all creative expression. It's the spark that ignites the flame of inspiration, the force that drives the artist's brush across the canvas. Through imagination, we transcend the limitations of our mundane existence and enter into the realm of the miraculous and the sublime. Imagination is the key to unlocking the secrets of the universe and to realizing the infinite potential of our own minds, the infinite potential of our own heart minds, I would say, the infinite potential of our heart minds. Because we know we limit ourselves through our perceptions, through our conditioning, through our just getting into rote habit and not reconsidering or being open to new things. So imagination can help us create a future that we want to live in. Imagination helps us make room, make more room, more space in our heart. And if we imagine more space, if you were able to do that in the practice a little bit, what did that space feel like? Or what did that invitation to invite someone in that you love feel like? Hopefully, and most likely, it felt soft. And this is the somatic aspect of it. So the heart, when it quivers, which is the one of the definitions of metta, is the quivering of the heart. A quivering heart needs some softness or it won't quiver. It'll be hard like a stone. Yeah, and we know what that feels like. We know what it's like to get tight and tense and not have a quivering heart, but have, you know, some feelings like jealousy or envy or distrust even, or not feeling a part of. Isolation is tight, it's tense, it's contracted. Clinging is tight, it's tense, it's contracted. So anything that we can do to bring in softness automatically affects the heart, mind, body, but especially the heart. So what if we were to imagine that our heart is growing, stretching its wings, softening, opening, and that our whole body is going to shape itself around that? Just take a second. What if your body changed shape because of your heart expanding, or from the expansion of your heart? Maybe you would sense your collarbone spreading, maybe lifting the chest towards the sky a little bit, maybe relaxing your throat, maybe your eyes get a little softer, maybe your face smooths out, maybe your body just softens a little bit more. These are all possibilities that we can cultivate and live. Maybe not 100% of the time, but a lot more of the time. Definitely a lot more of the time. Milarepa, whom you've probably all, most of you have heard about, wonderful Tibetan poet and yogi of the 11th century, he wrote a poem called Liberating the Heart. And he said, "My heart was once a prison, a dark and lonely cell, but now it's a temple where love and joy dwell. I used to be a captive, chained by fear and doubt, but now I'm a free man, woman, they, them. With wisdom as my scout. The walls I built around me to keep the world at bay have crumbled and fallen, and love has found its way. So if you're feeling trapped by anger, greed, or pain, just know that liberation is possible to gain. Open up your heart, let love come pouring in, and you'll find the freedom. The freedom that comes from within." A lot of times I think we try to think ourselves into liberation, freedom, being more clear, more kind, more compassionate, and that's good. We need to think about it, you know, to change our thoughts, to rearrange our perceptions, rearrange the internal furniture, I like to think of it as, to start again, to recognize even the conditioning or the patterns of behavior that we have that lead us to discomfort and pain and suffering and to being isolated and not feeling appreciated or loved, or not being able to love or appreciate each other. You know, we go to those places sometimes. So we want to be able to sense, know, think about when we're in a place like that. And we want to be able to sense especially what that feels like. What does that feel like? If we're not attuned to or addressing the body, then just thinking about change isn't going to be as complete as it could be. So the somatic processes or expressions of the body complement cognition. The Buddha taught about nama rupa, and you probably heard those words quite a few times. And nama rupa literally translates to mind body. Excuse me. But as my teacher, Ajahn Amaro, also reminds us, it also can translate as nama, mind, as mentality, and rupa, body, as materiality. And they're two forms of consciousness, two types of conscious awareness in different form or different material, right? One we think of as solid and one we think of as ethereal, but they're constantly communicating all the time, whether we're conscious of it or not. So we can utilize that awareness, if you will, and be in the body and create the conditions for liberating the heart somatically as well as cognitively. If you change the body, you change the mind. If you change the mind, you change the body. And the heart is in any of it, all of it. It can't be disincluded. You know, it's part of being human. So Bhikkhu Bodhi, some of you may know of it. He's so well regarded and, you know, such an amazing human being and translator of texts and environmentalist. He wrote in a piece called The Living Message of the Dhammapada, to draw out the living message of any great spiritual classic, it's not enough for us merely to investigate in terms of questions that might be posed by scientific scholarship. We have to take a step beyond scholarly examination and seek to make an application of those teachings to ourselves in our present condition. To do this requires that we use our intelligence, imagination, and intuition to see through the limiting cultural contexts out of which the work was born, and to see into those universal features of the human condition to which the spiritual classic is being studied and specifically addressed. He's inviting us to find the essence of a practice, a teaching. I think this is, I mean, this is how I interpret this one way. He's inviting us to use our intelligence, our cognition, ability to think, our imagination, which we all have. You have to imagine what you're going to have to eat before you make it or go buy it, for instance, and our intuition. And intuition lives in the body. All feelings, all senses are in the body. So let's not, you know, cut the head off in spite of the body. Let's include the two in union as much as possible. I want to read you a little bit from Bob Thurman, and I also want to invite some questions. But this is from a sort of an ancient publication. It's not that ancient, but ancient publication called Access, wait, oops, Insight. it was published by Wes Nisker. And there's a whole publication on just imagination. So I pulled this from there. It was from 2002. He says, so this is Robert Thurman, who I love. He's got such a personality, that's for sure. He's a great teacher. He says, say you are the Buddha and you're free of suffering and you feel totally great. And as happy as a bee and a clam and at one with the universe. And then you see all of these miserable people. Yet what good would it do for you to go and give them a big grin and a hug or smother them with some joyfulness? They'll just get freaked out and be paranoid and say, what does this person want? So instead, a Buddha has to develop some strategies, some art, to, first of all, open that person's imagination to the fact that there's a world where they don't have to be miserable all the time. And then he has to help them with a method of how to move from their paranoid corner of misery into the great ocean of bliss of the universe that you, a Buddha, perceive. All Buddhist art is liberative art. And I'm using the word art, he says, in quotes. It's a broader sense, as in a college of arts and sciences, as equivalent to the concept of upaya in Buddhism. Upaya is often translated as skillful means, a partly wrong, partly inspired translation. Upaya really refers to the means by which compassion, the universal compassion of an enlightened being, manifests in action to enable other beings to find freedom from suffering. This is fundamentally what the word upaya means in Mahayana Buddhism, and that word, I think, is best translated as art. So if we dig around a little bit, we can find so many Dharma teachers, scholars, practitioners mentioning imagination, talking about the importance of imagination as a skillful means, as upaya, to liberating the heart. And how we imagine is going to be what comes to us naturally. So the first step, I think, is to give yourself permission to allow whatever arises to be the way or the path that you follow. For instance, when we were doing the initial breathing, I suggested that you imagine breath as prana, or know that it is. It's life force, or it's chi, it's energy, or it's lung, what the Tibetans call wind. Or it's as if you're breathing in a cloud or a meadow or an ocean breeze. And if we imagine that, then it starts to rearrange how we feel about breath, and we notice it differently. We notice it differently. And then we can move the breath anywhere we want in our bodies through our imagination to create space, because imagination creates a physiological response. Imagination creates a physiological response. So we imagine that we're creating space in the area of the heart or anywhere in our bodies, really. You can do it in your mind. Maybe your thoughts will have more room to turn around, like Francis Bacabia said. But if we imagine more space around or in the heart, and then we invite people or beings in that we really love, we can feel it more. There's more room to feel. And then if we send it out through our breath or through our intentions or through our prayers or our wishes, it will start to make a difference. So there's the organization called the HeartMath Institute. You might have heard of that. Really great research project on the heart. And one of the things that just has blown me away that I learned from them is that neural electric field electromagnetic field, I'm just going to say it like that, that I can say, of the heart projects 3 feet out of the body. Personally, I think it's a little bigger than that. But they've measured it to be 3 feet outside the body and 100 times greater than the mind. 100 times greater. They've also shown that when we're connected with each other, that we sense each other's thoughts, feelings, what have you, even if we're across the planet. Think of that. Let that empower you. That can empower us. So we walk around with a little bit more softness and space, and maybe the eyes are looking out through the heart, or you're imagining that, then everybody that you come in contact with is going to sense something. They're going to sense it. And so we impact each other. We affect each other. We support each other in this way, not with language necessarily, but somatically, by our presence, by how we feel, by the space that we allow ourselves. So give yourself as much space as you can. That's also why we started by just noticing the space around us. Because, you know, we come to practice sometimes, and whether your eyes are opened or closed, what do we do generally? We go, boom, we go in. That's okay. Important, necessary. But we forget about everybody and everything else. Unless it's a nagging thought or something, you know. Then we remember other things. But the intention behind that is to remember that we're in this space, and this space is part of us. It's a constant exchange, full of energy, full of heart, full of intention. It's a field of possibility, as they talk about in quantum physics, a field of endless possibility. The field of possibility is what creates intentions. Intentions create action. So I'm going to leave some room for questions. I hope this was somewhat inspiring, and I really want to hear, even if it wasn't. I won't take it personally, but not everybody is inspired by everybody else or by somebody else. So I'd love to hear from you, and you can raise your hand and come on in, and Jorge will unmute you and you can share something with us.
Okay, so Shakti, you have your hand raised. Please unmute yourself and go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
So I was really attracted to this talk because I've been kind of on this mode lately of kind of changing my perspective a little and approaching each moment with creativity and imagination. And like kind of like what you're saying, but it what that does is it means that each moment is full of possibility, and I haven't limited it by preconceived notions, because I think that is something that I have to catch myself, you know, if I walk into a situation and go, oh God, not this. But, you know, like instead be like, oh, this is the situation. How can I act, and how can I be open to the possibility that, you know, maybe someone who I think they're going to react in a certain way, instead be like, you know, this there's possibility for something to emerge.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And
play with it.
Yeah, exactly. And it really is, like you were saying, you know, it's just, we have this precious life. And so let's see, do the most we can with that and not limit ourselves. But yeah, really, you know, and instead of seeing myself as someone with limitations, be like, well, no, I'm just, this is, you know, these are some material things going on, but it's not a container. It's more like, this is just the piece of paper that has some scribbles on it already, but I can still make art out of that, right?
Yeah.
I can still make a different drawing with those scribbles that are already on the page.
Beautiful. Yeah. And, you know, we'll put those scribbles aside sometime and forget about them, but we can remember, right? We can remember. I think that's so much of our practice, is remembering not to put ourselves down when we forget. That's not time to criticize ourselves, because we will. We're not enlightened yet, my favorite word. So the opportunities exist when we remember them. So it's a matter of practicing that, reminding ourselves in any way possible, right? Remember that repetition is what creates conditioning. Conditioning is embodied. So by doing something over and over and over again, we condition that in ourselves. That's upaya. That's a skillful means. So thank you. Really, yeah. Really well said. Really well said. I appreciate it.
I think meditation is the practice to help us cultivate some of these skillful means.
Definitely is one. Yeah. Thank you.
So, Ellen, you can unmute yourself, please.
Okay. Hi.
Hi.
And I really have a question. I don't speak it that well because it's tied up. So it's something like this. Since we are not our bodies, why are we practicing mindfulness centered on the body? That might seem like a silly question, but there's something about it that's getting me.
Oh, okay. That's great. I mean, it's a great question.
Okay. If I need to say more, I can, but...
Please go ahead. Yeah.
I understand we are not our bodies, that we are more than our bodies. You spoke to it today, the spaciousness. Mm-hmm. I'd love to go into that space. Mm-hmm. But so much of the mindfulness strategy and talk is centered on the body, the anchor to the breath. And I get that too. I think one of the greatest things about the breath is it brings the air from the outside inside, and we use it and it goes back out. So again, it, you know, like a metaphor for our connectedness. Mm-hmm. Right, and sharing, but maybe the question is, is it, I don't like to think of things as linear, but maybe there's a trajectory, like we're more than our bodies, we are not our bodies, but we start in the body, and then how do we go, is there a next step, and is the next step understanding that we are not our bodies? Maybe that's the question.
I think you have a lot of questions in one.
Yeah, that sounds like
great.
Me. I'm really, you know, it's
pages of journaling.
Thank you for trying.
Oh, yeah, I'll try.
Okay.
First of all, I really appreciate what you're saying, because there's a lot of truth to it. We are not our bodies, but yet we are a body. We are in a body. You know, that's where I found it very freeing to think of, well, and I come from a you know, decades of pain, physical pain and illness, right? So I divorced myself from my body because of that for a while until I started to practice in earnest and sat, you know, a lot of retreat. But we are not, the rupa aspect, the body rupa aspect of material form of consciousness is just as valuable as the mental form of consciousness. But it's not all we are. We're not just our body. So it's more of relative absolute truth, or the two truths. You've probably heard of the two truths. So yeah, we're more than our bodies. We're more than our thoughts. But yet we do have a body, and we can learn to understand and mine the wisdom of the body. There's a lot of it. And the Buddha talked about that a lot. It may not be with words, but it's incredibly intuitive and wise and gives us signals all the time. And, you know, there's lots of ways to work with the somatic aspect of mind. But, and we can also take care of our bodies. So we need to know that we have this body. It is what we're in right now. It's our container. It's a material form of awareness and consciousness. And we can take care of it and love it and know that it's not all we are. It's the same with our thoughts. It's the same with our feelings. So we have thoughts, we have feelings, and that's not all that we are either. We're much more than any of it. So I think if we try to place the two truths side by side, and like Bob Thurman was saying, use them as skillful means, even upaya, what's the compassionate view? Do we want to get so tight that I think I'm just this body and I don't like my body and I don't like anyone else and nobody, you know, is doing what I want? That's a tight view. That's a narrow view that includes being in a body, right? Or do I want to go the other way and say, you know what, that's not all there is, and start to examine and reflect and soften and practice, you know, maybe expand your breath. But it's not that we don't have an ego. We need an ego to get around. It's not that we don't have a body. We need a body to get around, but we're far more vast than that. So what's helpful? Is it to open the portal or to narrow it from time to time? Not close it, but narrow it. So I think if we look at the options of what we have at any given moment, choose the one that's the most supportive, kind, and beneficial, it's not one or the other.
Hmm.
So I just let that come in, and if you don't find anything useful, then that's fine. But maybe that was something just to offer for now, because it really very profound, very beautiful query. Thank you.
That was helpful, Jill. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Welcome, Ellen. Jane, can I say that? Jorge, Jane, you want to unmute yourself?
I've
not looked at the chat. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Jill, thank you so much. This has been really beautiful. And I think, you know, it's so much about what you were talking about with the heart math. I'm a psychotherapist, and I just want to kind of piggyback on what Ellen was saying, which I think is a fascinating thing to think about. As a psychotherapist that works with trauma survivors, I think you can't separate body from the mind, the spirit, and all the energy that surrounds us. And I think it's so important to be able to have the body be kind of, as you said, our wisdom to what's really happened in the past, as well as what's happening in the present. I work with clients that have been traumatized, and there's good old Bessel van der Kolk's book, The Body Keeps the Score. So the body is holding cellularly all of the history that is in us, and it's now, well, what do we do with that, and how do we manage our lives? And it's included, you know, I think it's so critical as a therapist that we not separate our head from our body, but to integrate and to really understand somatic practices, which are really filled with mindfulness, meditation, breathing techniques, all these things that we've really kind of delved into. So I'm going to stop talking. want to thank you, Jill.
Well, I appreciate it because, I mean, why look at ourselves so flatly? You know, it's like there's the unspoken language of the body, the somatic language. I call it somatic expression. I don't teach Stephen Levine's wonderful approach.
Peter.
I mean, I know it. Peter, that's what I said. Peter Levine, yeah. But I greatly appreciate the somatic expression of memory, of emotion. And that memory is not just in this lifetime. You know, there's genetic memory that we all have. But I think the path that we're on, if we choose to be following the Buddha's wisdom, includes knowing, recognizing behavior, patterns, conditioning in all forms, all realms, and then working with them so that they're not, so that we have options, so that we have choices, right? So by including the body, there are more choice. There's more choice. There's much more choice. It's infinite, like the mind.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. For the people interested, Peter Levine wrote the book Waking the Tiger. It's a wonderful book. And what we're talking about is polyvagal theory, which was Stephen Porges. He has a ton of books. So just wanted to add on. But I really appreciate that because I think we can really become very closed off to all aspects of life when we separate things and don't kind of see the whole picture.
Yeah.
And
well, that's why we need each other.
Exactly.
That's why we're here, right? Yeah.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. There's so many practices like the, you know, to work with the vagal nerve. Breathing practices are really, really potent to change, to transform, to rearrange. There's so much that we can do that isn't just sitting, standing, walking or lying down with our eyes closed and just going, you know, noticing our thoughts or getting caught in our thoughts. There's adjunct and complementary practices that help us be with what is, that help us. So we actually can be with what is. So we want to include this, you know, huge, vast array of different yogic wisdom practices that have been going on forever, you know, in human lifetime, forever terms, that support moving energy, opening space, softening the heart, rearranging the body, etc. So it's pretty endless.
Just to tag on to that, to really get in touch with energy, practicing Tai Chi or Qigong can make a huge impact on your life. I teach Qigong and I would highly recommend people check it out.
Yeah. Any of the physical arts are really great. Thank you. Is there another hand or shall I look at the chat?
I don't see any more raised hands for the moment. There's some comments on the on the chat.
Shakti says, I live with chronic illness, pain, and disability. But I come back to the present moment with inclusivity, and I can be with whatever arises. Thank you. That's a not always easy to do. I appreciate that. It's not always easy to do. So whenever we can do that, we can celebrate it. When we can't do that, we can recognize that that's normal too. That's okay. So we do our best and we do our best with what's arising in with all the different kinds of skillful means that we have. So thank you for sharing that.
And just read this from Hazel, because I find this quite
Please, yeah.
I like movies, so you know, without imagination, life is a series of photographs. Imagination turns life into a motion picture.
Oh, thank you, Hazel. That's great. That's right. And we can freeze the frame and rewind it and rewind it and rewind it ad nauseum too, right? So there's all sorts of variations on that fantastic theme. Yeah, the movie of our life. And we can cut and paste different parts of it. That's memory. And believe in it. But what we really have is like, okay, so what is the movie that we want to make now? One of my Tibetan teachers used to say that life is like a movie. And one time I was on retreat with him, and this is like 30 years ago. He invited a few of us to go to see a film in the middle of the retreat. And I thought, well, that's interesting. But you know, the teacher, the Lama, is inviting you to go see a movie with him at night. You know, we'd practiced all day, and I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go. Well, he somehow, I don't know if it was an active choice or not, but the film that he chose, and I don't remember what it was this incredibly violent film. And I thought, I can't do this. I'm too permeable. I'm on retreat and too open. And so I said, Rinpoche, I'm not sure I can go to this film. You know, I get image burns. You know, I will remember it. I'll probably think about it in the practices or something like this. And he said, oh, no, don't worry. He said, remember, it's just like life. He said, you're looking at the screen. I won't try to imitate his voice, but it was really fun. He said, no. They're looking at the screen, and what you know what you're seeing isn't real, right? But the movie is so good that it makes you forget that, and you think it's real from time to time. So just remind yourself it's not real. He says it's the same thing that you're seeing in your mind all the time. You think it's real. Remind yourself from time to time it's not real. He said, so if you can practice with a movie, you can practice with your own mind. I was like, I get it. I went. I wasn't like, it didn't ruin my retreat. I just don't watch violent films still, because I don't feel like I need to, you know, and it's not something I choose to bring in. But I did it, and it was okay. It was okay. So I got what he meant for a moment, you know. I mean, that was a pretty interesting teaching moment. I remember it 30 years later. So that's my riff on a film. Thank you for bringing that in,
Jill. There's another couple of comments. I think Yang Chen just
okay.
I struggled with allowing people in during meditation. Should we challenge this or let it be?
Well, that's a really nice question. I mean, nice because that's kind of, you're being kind to yourself actually to even ask that. When we assume that we need to challenge ourselves all the time, that's not very kind. So the fact that you are allowing yourself to just say, you know, can I let this be, is really quite nice. So I would say that we know each other, or ourselves, excuse me, pretty well. You know, the longer we live and the longer we practice and turn within, the more we get to know ourselves and our patterns, our behavior, when we're getting away with something and when we might need to put ourselves to task a little bit. So I think that's something that you have to sort of feel out for yourself. But err on the side of kindness. Is this helpful for me right now to try a little harder? Or is this just going to make me tight? Is this just going to make me criticize myself because I can't do it or I don't want to do it? Ask yourself those kinds of questions and let your intuition, the wisdom of your somatic experience, Are you tightening up when you're trying? Can you breathe a little and open the window of tolerance a little bit more? You know, all of these kinds of queries and questions I think are really helpful around what we're doing, why we're doing it, and when we're doing it. There's a right time and place for everything, but let's go forward with kindness. That doesn't mean you're lazy or undisciplined, but learning to be kinder to ourselves, more respectful to ourselves as a human being, a human heart, having this existence that we have no plan for, that we're experimenting with, I think that's the way to go. So use it as an experiment. See how it goes. See how it goes. That's great. Thank you. Really, really phenomenal question. I wish we had more time, but this time we don't. So.
We don't. And Jill, could I ask you, because some of the folks asked to have the quotes and the poem.
Oh boy.
Read. Could you just please send me that afterwards, and I could publish
I'll send some.
Into the sure. Sun Connect. And there's another question that stayed behind. If I can send you that too.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
Write an answer and then I'll publish it too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm here. At least for now. I have a website. You can contact me through my website. This is a topic that I love teaching about. I'll teach about it again. I would love to see you and reach out if I can help you in any way or support you, or you have a question for me. I'm happy to connect with you. It may not be right away, but I will connect with you. I just really appreciate your openness in coming to this and playing around. And remember, it's just, we're a living experiment here. So let's do our best and do it together. And any of the benefits of our practices together for today, let's share them with all living beings. Just take one moment. May the benefits and merits of our practices be for all. And thank you so much, Sangha Life, for having me back. I appreciate it. Hope to see you all again.